NetCredit is here to say yes, because you're more than a credit score. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at netcredit.com/partners. NetCredit, credit to the people.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
The best guys in the world. I don't care who's in front of me. I'm going to go out there and do my best and get that W. Dana, if you don't know, now you know.
We all know now. Let's hear it again. Fantastic fight. Dan Ige, everyone.
Declaring the winner by tap out due to a rear naked choke, Kenny Canfloria.
Welcome to UFC Unfiltered. Unless you're watching on Fight Pass, in which case, whatever we're talking about happened 2 years ago.
We're trying
to get updated here and try to get them up on time.
Jimmy, were those new glasses I seen you wearing?
They're reading glasses. And I'm sorry if my audio is not great. I'm trying to adjust it. I'm sorry if it sounds a little scratchy. I'm having the connection fixed tomorrow. So hopefully by next show will be better.
Hey, Jimmy, before we talked to Kenny Florian, who I can't wait to talk to Kenny.
Dan Ige,
yeah. Both guys. I mean, Kenny, I know for over, 30 years or something. I don't know, 20-something years. I know him for, back when we both started on the jiu-jitsu, the grappling circuits, before we both fought MMA. It's crazy. But before we talk about that, I'd say guess what I was just doing, but you're never going to guess. Where I just came from.
Hopefully not the same thing I was doing.
I'm going to say it's probably the exact opposite. Listen, I'm not going to do the guessing game.
Rolling.
No. Jimmy, now you're making me. Now you don't dampen the mood. Because that upsets me when I know I can't roll. I came from, I wish we had the drum roll. But I just came from a birthday parade. For Ray Longo. The whole fight deep. Why are you cringing? Like something Triple C would say.
A birthday parade?
You know what? This is what they do, Jimmy. They do it usually for kids. Okay. They can't have celebrations. So what people do, they do a bunch. They take a bunch of, they get the cars, right? And they drive past the person's house, beeping the horn, holding up signs. Somebody will run out with a gift, put it on the sidewalk like it's a bomb and run away and run back. Like so we all went there. It was like me and the whole fight team pretty much. Except for Aljo, but he's training for a fight and he might get shit about that though. I'm giving him some shit about that. But it was myself, Marab, wife, the whole Sarah family, you know, my wife, kids. Marab, we had Nas in there, we had Pumi. Oh, we had the whole crew. I told you Raging Al. What a great time.
Yeah.
Chris Weidman. Did I say Chris Weidman?
You did not, but I'm glad.
Oh, and his son CJ. It was just Jimmy. It felt so. I couldn't hug anybody,
right.
But it felt so good just to be around everybody. Dr. Sherry. Oh, Jenny. I listen to me. I just am in a good mood. Look at the difference now. Look at me.
Yep, you are very happy. You're very chipper. Very chipper.
Don't look away. I know you can look away. Now it's weird, Jimmy. I'm happy.
You seem happy.
I know my people, man. And it just makes me so, I cannot wait just to get back to somewhat
normal,
semi-normal times and being able to give my guys a bro hug. And I don't know. It was just felt really good. So we all just started beeping the horns like idiots and we got out and.
You were happy to see your friends.
That's it. It's not a great story, but
no, it's nice though. I'm happy you're able to do it. Yeah, good.
It's just good to see everybody, man. Because these are guys that I'm usually seeing a few times a week, if not, And so it's I don't know.
Where do you guys meet for the parade? Do you meet at the head of the block, or do you meet in a parking lot?
We're at a Starbucks near his house. But then, of course, with us, I went one way and a few people followed me. The other people went the other. So we kind of kid it from both directions. We didn't, you know, what are you going to do? So they went out. So we, some people went down the other. It's usually supposed to be one long line, but we kind of both like, somehow we separated, but we got there.
What is it, like good, four cars?
Oh, no, there was like at least, I'm going to say there was at least like between 8 and 10 of us.
Oh, okay.
More, yeah. No, it was nice, man. I'll post something on my Instagram. At SarahBJJ on Instagram.
Yeah. That's a nice amount of people.
It was fun, man. It was good to see Chris Longo.
And it must have made him happy that people cared enough about his birthday to show up. Because that'd be my greatest fear, is that nobody would come to my birthday.
In 10 minutes, he's like, all right, don't you got to go do a podcast? Try to get rid of me.
Yeah.
What up, man?
Teddy Florian! Come on, man. That's happy to see me.
I am very.
This thing before it begins.
You're no Ray Longo, but yeah, I mean, it's cool.
Thank God I'm not Ray Longo.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, I see you got the blur in the background. Is that your living room, or do you have an office in the house?
This is, a little kind of office, I guess. Extra bedroom that we use as an office. Yeah.
As you said that, I just realized my bathroom was showing.
Yeah, it's okay.
Is that better now? I don't want to get yelled at. Kenny, you're a married man. You don't want to.
I know. Oh, dude, believe me.
Hey, listen, I haven't, first of all, good to see you, buddy.
Good to see you as well,
come
man.
Come on, man. It's just been so long.
I know.
We actually had your old friend, you guys used to work together, Karen Bryant on. Yes.
Yeah.
And in the middle of our interview, I'm just like, where the F is Kenny Florian? Where have you been, man?
That's a good question. Where the hell have I been? No, just kind of hanging out, man. Been doing the podcast with John Anik, and just been teaching a lot, training a lot, thankfully, which is great. And just kind of hanging out, man. But I miss being around the UFC, dude. I don't know why I'm not there, but I'm not.
How long since you have been?
I guess it's probably, 2 years now? Going on 2 years, yeah.
And how long did you do the analyst work for Fox?
I started with ESPN in 2007, something like that, with ESPN. And then when it moved to Fox, I went over to Fox. So I've been doing stuff with UFC, actually, Maddie, since UFC 83. The first time I did something with the UFC was when you fought GSP in Montreal. That was the first thing I ever did, really, with the UFC officially. So,
I'll just add that first, you didn't look too thrilled when I seen you. I'm upset about that. Second of all, you bring up my ass kicking in Montreal. You're batting a fucking thousand, my friend. I'll tell you, Jimmy.
Oh God!
Go back in the positive, Bill.
It is very hurtful, Matt. I understand. It's very hurtful.
What I will say, this is the absolute truth. Was Matt? Matt was one of the guys that every jiu-jitsu guy on the East Coast looked up to, because he was actually out there like beating Brazilians' asses in jiu-jitsu tournaments. And I was like, that is possible. It's actually possible that an American can go out there and win the big tournaments and look as good as he did. And I was like, that guy is my hero. So Matty has been one of my, he doesn't know, he's been one of my mentors and heroes for a very long time. So dude's a stud.
Don't make me blush. But listen, Jimmy, the reason why I could break Kenny's balls the way I do, even though it's one of those things, like, Jimmy, I don't know if you ever, you probably have some of your friends from comedy that even if you don't see them, but you know them for 20 years, but you don't see them in a while, you could just go back to, I mean, me, like Kenny said, I came up under Henzo Gracie. He came up under Henzo Gracie's cousin. Get his name right for me, please.
Roberto Maia, yes.
Yes.
Roberto Maia.
Yeah, and he was in Boston. Yes. So like we would see each other at Nagas, and we got to meet each other early on, man. I forget the belt, but it might have been purple belt or something.
Yep, absolutely. You were a brown belt, and I believe I was a purple belt when we first met. So
So great. I mean, that's how long we know each other. So I feel very comfortable, Kenny. So don't think I'm being a dick to him, Jimmy.
No, not at all. No, I understand. Normally, when I don't see my comedy friends, it's because they're doing much bigger things than I am. That's normally why it's like they're doing arenas, and I'm in a 200 seat club. So if I don't see people I know, it's because they're doing much better than I'm doing.
Well, I mean, I love to see guys from the UFC that fought in the UFC and had a great career like Kenny had. He had some beautiful fights. especially when he choked out my buddy Dean Thomas. Don't bring. Listen, I can attack him when he's not here. He's my buddy. But no, Kenny had such a great career in the cage. But unlike a lot of guys, you were great as an analyst. Did you do that while you were still fighting, or were you done already?
I did actually. Joe Silva, you know, the former matchmaker for the UFC, of course. For those people who aren't familiar, he brought it up to me one day. He's like, "Listen, you're like a nerd when it comes to mixed martial arts. You love talking about it." I would talk to him about other fights and what he should do and blah blah. And he's like, "Well, you should do commentary." And I was like, "Really?" He's like, "Yeah, you should do it." He's like, "You know what? You might fight the winner of Roger Huerta and Clay Guida. We'll bring in for one fight, and you just come in because you could fight them next. So why don't you call that fight? It was the Ultimate Fighter 6 finale, and we'll see how it goes." And I was like, "Cool." So I did that, and it went well. And then the next event I did was UFC 83 in Montreal. Joe Rogan wasn't able to be there, and I was so nervous, man. It was like my first UFC fight. I was nervous as hell. I was sweating, and it was so damn loud in that place, as you probably remember. It was probably the loudest I've ever heard it. I had, you know, these cans on, and I'm trying to call the fight, and I couldn't hear a damn thing. It was so loud in there.
UFC 83, you said?
Yeah, UFC 83. Oh, it was crazy. And that was like, you know, a huge freaking event. And I was so nervous to do that one. So that's kind of how it all started.
Kenny, do you realize that event in Canada at that time was the largest? Yes, 22,000 people at the time chanting "fuck you, Sarah," and all. Jimmy, it was brutal.
They were not happy to see you, Matt.
And for some reason, I did an interview this morning from a Toronto radio station. Of course, they're bringing up the Montreal flag. What the fuck? Yeah. But Kenny, so for your first event, you had to do the biggest live event ever the UFC had. That's crazy.
It was crazy. It really was crazy. I was so nervous. I'm trying to fill Joe Rogan's shoes, you know, and everyone's like, "Who the hell is this guy? Why isn't Rogan here?" You know, so that's like all going on in my head. And I'm like, "Oh, man, here we go." It was wild. It was pretty
Do you think
wild.
You did anything wrong? Like, when you look back on it, do you listen to him and go like, "Oh, fuck, I talked too much," or "I didn't talk enough"? Or what do you think you did that you got better at?
First of all, Jim, I'm sure my voice sounds like Mickey Mouse, number one. Just that alone. But yeah, I don't know, man. I don't like hearing myself back so much. I try to force myself to do it over the years just because I want to get better at it. But it's painful for me for whatever reason. I just don't like hearing myself talk for too long. I don't know. Yeah. Even though I do it a lot, but yeah.
I'm the same way. I hate it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, because, you know, you were never cringy. How much time you got clocked in inside the octagon, and you were great with the mic. So, I mean, it just hit me when I was talking to Karen. Thanks. I'm like, "What's up?" And I know you do the podcast with John Anik, which Ray Long was a part of.
Yes.
And it's called, the Anik and Florian?
Anik and Florian podcast, exactly, yeah.
And you also, and what a time to do it, have a beautiful new school. No, I'm only kidding. You have what a rough time for it.
I know.
You have, what is it? It's with an M.
It's Meraki. So Meraki. It's a Greek word that says to do something with love, put soul into what you do. And I just thought it was a cool word. So I was like, I like that word. So Meraki, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. We're in Santa Monica in California. And it's been great, man. We grew so fast, and then all of a sudden this pandemic hit, and it's just fucking nuts. So it's been tough for the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu owner, as I'm sure you know. Yeah.
And you know what, dude? It's such a shame. I mean, I can't wait till it gets back to us just being able to strangle each other again. Because Kenny, you got to think. I mean, we have the same exact life. You got your podcast, you got your school. I mean, I got the same shit. It's a good post-fight career. You know what I mean? Yeah. Besides any other gigs you do. And again, like we talked, I'd love to see you be on the desk somewhere. Yeah. But if it's just the school and the podcast, that's a good fucking life. So, I mean, I am killing. We just did, and I'm sure Ray's going to tell you about it. We just surprised your buddy Ray Longo with a birthday parade. You know what that is, right?
No. What is that?
We did it. The kids do it like because they can't have any like birthday parties. So whoever's birthday it is, you drive to the house with a bunch of cars, beeping the horn. So yeah, that, me, Weidman, Al, fucking Raging Al, fucking Marab, Jenny, all of us with the fucking signs. But anyway, why the fuck did I bring that up about the birthday parade?
The gym. But they're talking about the gym.
Yeah, just things, yeah, okay, things that are happening.
Yeah. I mean, I was just around the guys again, and I'm just like, man, it's such a huge part of my life that I miss. Don't you miss the camaraderie and the atmosphere at your school?
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm not trying to pat myself on the back, but, you know, like the community that we've built over there, and you know it, there's nothing like a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu community because everyone gets their ass kicked together. Everyone sweats together. Everyone bleeds together. So there's just like this camaraderie and community within the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu realm that is just unlike any other, I feel like. Even among schools, like anytime I saw Matt when he was at a tournament or whatever, it was just – there's this brotherhood, right? Everyone respects each other. Everyone knows what we've all been through. And I miss that like crazy. I really do. You know, obviously, the training, of course, it's just not the same. But yeah, missing the guys and just having that kind of that daily routine of seeing the people that you're training with. And yeah, it's tough, man. This is a really interesting time for gym owners.
When you left the UFC, was it on bad terms, or was it just is there anything, any reason?
I don't even know if I've left the UFC. No, like it's funny, Jim, I'm like I'm as confused as you guys are, because I never got like a I never got like a phone call being like, hey, Kenny, thanks, man. But, you know, take it easy. Right. So in any time, you know, I always inquired. I always talked to, you know, the producers over there and be like, hey, you know, is everything cool? Like, do you guys need me to change something? Like, what's going on? And I never got an answer. I think Brendan Schaub says I just got like phased out like Milton on in the office. It's just kind of like my office down in the basement. And then I took away my, you know, like, I'm like, yo.
Oh, office space you're talking about. Office space.
Yeah.
But they didn't fire you. All right.
Yeah. So I don't know what the deal is. I don't know. I gotta talk to Dana or something. I don't know.
Wasn't it that you worked? Was it because you worked at Fox, or did you come over with them? Or I don't know.
Oh no. So I was over at Fox and I was doing my thing, and then, you know, I never, you know, when it transitioned back over to ESPN. You know, I never got the call or whatever. So I don't know, man. You know, I really miss it like crazy. I really do. I love calling the fights. I love analyzing fights. That's all I do. It's all I like to do. So, you know, for me, I feel like it's a shame. And I also feel like, you know, candidly, I feel like, you know, I feel like I offer something a little bit different than the other guys. And you know, I wish I could still be doing it.
Well, I'm sure your phone's going to be ringing soon. But listen, speaking of fights, I want to talk to you about some fights coming
up. Yeah, let's do it.
Your take, and now I don't know, it's confirmed, it's not confirmed, people are putting pictures up. It's going to happen.
It's going to happen.
Yep.
Tyrone Woodley versus Gilbert Burns.
Yeah.
I want your thoughts.
Man, that's such an interesting fight. I've been talking about it the last couple of days. My business partner, Jason Hunt, who I own Meraki Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu with, he's really good buddies with Gilbert. So he's been asking me like every single day, what do you think is going to happen, dude? How is Gilbert going to do? Man, I really don't know about that one for a couple reasons. First of all, we haven't seen Tyron in there for a long time. And, you know, I feel like, you know, some people are saying he's not as motivated now. Gilbert's been talking a lot of trash. He's kind of become this cowboy character where he's ready to take a fight on a week's notice anywhere in the world. He's got some good momentum right now. Just knocked out Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu legend Damian Maia. So he definitely has power. He's got confidence. He's got momentum right now. And obviously he's got the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu skills. But Tyron Woodley's style is a very tough matchup for a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu guy like Gilbert Burns, even if you can kind of strike and you got some power, because Woodley, I think, probably carries even more power than Gilbert. I think he's a little bit bigger, you know, structure-wise. And, you know, he's going to be tough to be taken down. So if Tyron is motivated and ready to go, I think Tyron's going to be really tough to beat. If Tyron, you know, sometimes he gets a little gun shy, you don't see him like really let the hands go. Gilbert could bring it to a decision, or maybe he could catch him. So I'm really curious to see how this goes down. You know, the other thing which makes things particularly difficult, Matt, and I'm sure you know with your guys, it's tough to get quality training in right now. Not everybody's in the gym. You don't have access to your regular training partners. The you know, that same vibe that you have in the gym with the energy of everybody training and getting ready. It's just not the same. So I think training in silence and only having a few coaches or training partners at your disposal makes it particularly difficult for both guys. So it's hard to kind of predict these fights during these times. So, you know, if I had to make a bet, I would probably be leaning towards Tyron Woodley just based on his experience and the way that he matches up against Gilbert. But I wouldn't rule out Gilbert Burns at this point. You know,
it's a tougher time to train for a grappler than it is to train for a striker.
I think so. Yeah.
Just to touch base, because we brought it up, we talk about Gilbert Burns, his fight versus Damian Maia, man, yes, everybody's talking about the knockout, but let's talk about how he got back to his feet. And being a black belt, Kenny, in jiu-jitsu, he made it enough of a jiu-jitsu match that Damian had to counter with jiu-jitsu, and then he got back to his feet. He did not just try to get back to his feet. So, right. You know what I mean? So it wasn't just, all right, get him off me, get up, because he's such a master at taking the back. He took the back. There's so much that happened. It wasn't a long fight, but there's so many little minute transitions that just made such a difference that I don't think an average fan really knew. Oh, he got out and got up. No. He made it enough of a jiu-jitsu match that Damian had to match him with jiu-jitsu, and then he was back up, if that even makes sense.
100%, because how many times do you see Damian Maia take someone down, and they never get up? Like, either the round ends, and that dude was on his back, you know, the whole time, or, you know, they had to tap, obviously. You know, Maia is such an amazing specialist, a guy that it's rare to see someone like that in today's day and age, you know, who is that good at one particular thing. You know exactly what he's going to do, and you still can't stop it. Gilbert Burns, obviously, his world-class Brazilian jiu-jitsu really came into play in that fight. He needed that against Maia.
Woodley did a good job, too, against Damian, stuffing takedowns.
Yep.
So you wonder if that would come into play against Gilbert Burns as well. I imagine if Damian couldn't take him down, I think Burns would have a hard time as well.
Well, I think absolutely, Jim. I think that, you know, having that experience and having got 25 minutes with Maia adds a lot. He's been there. He's seen that kind of thing. And as Maddie knows, being in all those big fights in the UFC, that really does matter. It puts you at ease. It makes you more familiar with that opponent that's coming up. Being like, I know what this guy can do. I've dealt with Damian Maia. I'll be able to deal with Gilbert Burns. I would think anyway.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Like, I heard Dana say that he thought that Tony looked slow in his fight and he looked off with his fight versus Justin Gaethje. I don't necessarily agree with that. I think that he always looks like that and he takes punishment and then he ends up just wearing guys down and taking them out, which he could not do. And he just breaks people mentally and physically. But Justin had such an A game and he just kept his poise and he was more calculated than just trying to finish Trevor Whitman. A lot to be credited to Trevor Whitman. Do you think Tony looked off in that fight? What is your thoughts on that fight?
Maddie, I couldn't agree with you more, man. I actually think that – here's the thing. If we look at, let's say, Ferguson's last five fights, and this is not a knock on Tony. This is not a knock on any of those fighters. Tony's an absolute stud. He's a legend. He'll go down as one of the best 155-pounders in the world. But – when you look at the other guys that he faced, you look at the difference, the Kevin Lees, the Barbosas, the Anthony Pettis, all those guys, in my opinion, if you look from the outside in, you look at how they move and their skill, skillful, right? That they're more skillful, than Tony Ferguson, right? The difference in that fight was in those fights was Tony Ferguson's will to win, his determination, his toughness. He just wore those guys down. He just kept coming at them. And they're like, I'm going home. That's it. I don't know how to deal with this guy. Take it easy. You're a little too tough. He met another guy in Justin Gaethje who can actually match the same kind of mindset, the same kind of determination that he has. The difference was Gaethje's a little bit more skillful with his striking. And I think that came into play finally. If I'm skillful, right, but the other dude is just mentally tougher, he doesn't get tired, he's going to keep coming forward. If I can't match that toughness, if I can't match that mindset, I'm done. Unless my skill is just so far superior, like a Floyd Mayweather, where that doesn't even come into play, you can't even hit me. That's gonna be a factor. And against Gaethje is one of those guys who's willing to die in the octagon. That is not an exaggeration. That is not hyperbole. He's actually willing to. So is Tony. The difference was the skill of Gaethje and the pacing. You mentioned Trevor Whitman, getting him to calm down after that first or second round. Yeah. I thought was huge. That was really what won him the fight.
Not to mention, you know, when you're trying to take somebody out and they're absorbing your best shots and they keep coming, it's not just that it gets winding. It does get winding, but mentally, guys are just like, no, I can't put this guy away.
You start to think, is this guy human? Like, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he was hitting Ferguson probably better than I've ever seen anybody get hit more consistently, and he was still coming. But it didn't discourage Gaethje. That's the amazing thing, is that he didn't get discouraged by that, which was crazy.
Yeah. That's where a corner really could make a difference in a fight, if you ask
me. Absolutely.
And you know what I mean? It just by calming him down, by keeping him alert between that fourth and that fourth round, between the fourth and fifth round, keeping him alert. Hey, man, last time you got too happy. And then there was such a connect there. Like, because then Justin's like, yep, I got stopped. He goes, you got stopped. He goes, I got stopped twice. Yeah, he knew. They were there, man. It was like they were in the gym together. It was really something. I said it before. It was something to see. That was some good corner work.
100%. And also, I think it's important to mention the idea of failures really being ultimately success stories. If you look back and you look at your weaknesses and you look at your mistakes, because Gaethje won that fight not only from Trevor Whitman, but also from those losses against Dustin Poirier and Eddie Alvarez, because he was winning those fights against those guys too early on, but didn't know how to pace himself. He didn't understand what it meant to really do that and calm down. He would just go ballistic and knock everybody out in WSOF before he was over in the UFC. And he was doing that early on, ended up doing it against Michael Johnson. He needed those losses to understand, oh, okay, wait a sec. I can't just go nuts for every minute of every round. I got to pace myself. These guys are tough. These guys are elite as well. And I think it's those losses against Poirier and Eddie Alvarez that allowed him to calm down and go, wait a sec, I'm doing the same thing. Let me change it up.
Did you ever fight anybody like that where you're hitting him and you're giving him everything and he just won't go down?
I remember, you know, Sean Sherk was kind of like that. Not that I hit him like, you know, as hard as Gaethje hit Ferguson, but I remember landing knees and kicks and he just kept coming forward, man, and he just didn't get tired. So, yeah, I remember that kind of being similar to that thing. Yeah.
And Sean had like little limbs. Like he was hard to do any in the he's one of those guys that could do a good ground and pound in the guard.
Right.
Because his little arms, like it's not, and he's hard to triangle an arm lock and he pull out and come down. Poor Sean Sherk, that guy. A lot of people listening right now, unless they're diehards, they might not even know him.
I know.
Like, you know what I mean? That's upsetting to me. Everybody who's listening, type into Fight Pass, look up Sean Sherk.
Oh, the muscle shark?
I mean, listen, your fights with him alone, Kenny with his elbows from bottom. You know what's funny, Kenny? I know we see you elbowing, and Kenny's got elbows, Jimmy, that could just carve up a fucking turkey, man. I have the
You have little narrow elbows? You get narrow elbows?
I have that. Show me, lift up your shit. Show me. Kenny, come on, man. Dude. Like a razor thing. Blade. Like a fucking razor. Jimmy. I remember, because we were talking about UFC 83, when GSP took me down, and I remember, and I think of Kenny too, and I remember thinking of like, oh man, I'll be like, fucking Kenny, cut him from down there. The first thing I did when he took me down, I said this before, I push his head, I snap into my shitty ass fucking round elbows.
You got juicy elbows, Matt. You got juicy elbows.
Dude, I severely like bruised my ulnar nerve. Dude, I felt like I had a dead arm. I go, ah, dude. Then he puts half guard. I go, fucking worst beginning of a fight ever. But anyway, it just reminded me that you and your
brother. It pays to not have muscle. I said, you did it wrong, Matt. You did.
Well, hey, speaking of muscle, I'm a segue king. I've always thought, and I've said this before, Tony and Justin Gaethje fought, that Gaethje versus Habib is the fucking fight. Because styles make fights, like we were just talking about with Gilbert Burns and Woodley. Styles really make such a difference. Tony, as tough as he is, and I feel that a lot would be determined if he could do something from his back. Because he'd be getting down, he'd be taken down. That's what Eddie Bravo really would have been utilized in a corner. You know what I mean? Like, could he do something with the rubber guard? Could he tie him up? You know, could Habib deal with that kind of offensive thing off his game off his back, like aggressive guard? Yes. But now you got Justin Gaethje, who's such a stud wrestler. He uses it to keep the fight up. He's shown that his gas tank is fucking top notch. Mm-hmm. He's never looked better, knocking everybody out besides Tony in the first round, stopping Tony. What is your thoughts on that fight?
Listen, I agree with you. I think it's an amazing matchup. You know, Gaethje, he doesn't utilize his wrestling offensively. He definitely utilizes it defensively. Apparently, that's what he was known for also in college, his defensive wrestling ability, his ability to sprawl. That's what you need against someone like Habib. You need to keep that fight on the feet. And I think everyone would agree, if that fight stays on the feet, Gaethje increases his chances of getting that knockout. And, you know, I think for Ferguson, as good as he is, and yes, he could beat Habib, obviously that's a possibility, but Habib's style, it's like, you know, that kind of pressure passing style where he's low and tight, he doesn't make a lot of mistakes. There's not a whole lot of, you know, space for you to kind of work a submission in the transition. So for Ferguson, I didn't think that was the best matchup. For Gaethje, I agree with you. I think, you know, his wrestling style, his hard hitting style, I think he can match up really good against Habib. If I had to pick right now, I would probably be leaning towards Habib until I can see someone actually stop Habib from taking him down and utilizing that ground and pound. How can you go against a guy who's been undefeated for this long? But I do think that if there's one guy who could pull it off and get a knockout, it's Gaethje. I really do.
Kenny, let me just ask you. I'm wondering myself, has Habib ever fought a wrestler with Justin's credentials? Do you know that?
He fought, I think, in one of his early fights. I remember because I called it, a guy named Kamal Shalarous, who is an Iranian guy. Who he wrestled at the international level, I believe, not like a medalist or anything like that, but I would compare it about that, you know, level. But he wasn't exactly the best striker, right? Kamal wasn't the best striker, and I think the way that Kamal integrated his wrestling compared to how Habib integrates his wrestling for MMA was different. I mean, Habib really knows how to utilize wrestling for MMA, and I think that was a big difference coming in. He took down Kamal easily and just kind of mopped the floor with him, really. So I don't know. And it could go down that way. Habib is an absolute monster, man. And I don't know if we've seen anyone as dominant with him with that wrestling ground and pound style in 2020. Like, that's a style from like early 2000s, you know, where the Mark Coleman's, the Mark Kerr's, and all those guys are really successful. We're seeing that same style effective in 2020. It's pretty mind-boggling, man. That's how good he is.
Do you think that Habib's ability to take him down kind of takes away Justin's wanting to chop his legs? Because that's one of the things he does that's most effective. Do you think that takes that away from him, knowing that every time he throws a kick, he's kind of putting himself out there for a takedown?
It's a factor, man. I think that's a great point. You do become susceptible, especially if you're attacking like the upper level of the quad, because the higher that leg goes, like right around that waist level, it could be easy for Habib to kind of time that double leg takedown. I think he either should go high or start doing those calf kicks that everybody's doing now. Maddie, no one was really doing that when we were fighting. Exactly. Saved our legs. Good. Now everybody's throwing those damn calf kicks. That is a real pain in the ass. It's hard to block. It's hard to hit a takedown off of those things. So I think Gaethje should maybe switch it up if he's going to throw those leg kicks. Do it that way. Yeah.
Kenny, what do you want to plug? We got Dan Ige, Jimmy, calling yes. in now. What do you want to plug, Kenny? Plug some stuff, please.
Man, that's pretty much it. You know, anyone who's in the Boston area, come by my gym, Florian Martial Arts Center. If you're in L.A., please stop by Meraki Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And, guys, awesome talking to you. And
you too, Kenny. Chance
to Maddie, it was awesome to see your face.
That's what I wanted. I just wanted that.
I'm like a little kid.
Little kid that needs attention.
I remember.
I missed him, Kenny.
In one of the UFCs, and you know, he used to work in Boston, so I know his voice, and he's provided many laughs for me. So awesome to talk to you guys. Thank you.
Oh, you too, buddy. Good pleasure Good talking to you.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Dan Ige!
What's going on?
What's going on, buddy? How are you, dude? You look clean. Let me see. How many stitches is that?
Not
Let me see
bad
that.
Enough. I had four, but my dog took one out this morning.
Oh, get out of here. What kind of dog do you have?
We just got a new puppy, little Boston Terrier.
Oh, that's
he jumped
that's
on my awesome. Face.
And that's so awesome. Hey, yeah. man, listen to me. Congratulations. Great fight versus Barboza, bro.
Thank you. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Well, your record now, 6-1 in the UFC. I mean, I'm like, why aren't people talking about Dan Ige more, you know? I don't know who picked you for the last – I know I picked you in this last fight. I'm not putting Jimmy on blast, but I picked you, buddy.
I think I did pick Barboza, yeah. But no one – you can never be – say it's a terrible pick to pick Edson Barboza. You know, I didn't pick him in the first round.
I don't blame you. I don't – Edson Barboza's a killer. He's a legend. You know, that dude's been in the top 10, top 5 of the world for – the past 10 years. And I'm super happy to get a win over that guy. It's just awesome, especially on a 2.5 weeks notice. It was pretty crazy, man.
What were you doing when they asked you, Dan? Were you training for somebody else? Were you just staying in shape, or were you just kind of on the couch relaxing and said, fuck, I'll get ready?
So, you know, I fought in February, not too long ago. And then right after my fight, you know, I got the win, obviously, over Mirsad Bektik. I went back home to Hawaii for about a week to see my family, kind of decompress. And then right after that, Khabib was getting ready to fight Tony Ferguson April 18th. So I flew out to San Jose because every time he has a camp and he comes to the States, like, I love training with those guys. Like, it's just – it's crazy how, like, you know, how much better I'll get every time I train with them. And so any opportunity I have to go train with them, I'll do it. And so I was helping Khabib get ready. And then obviously the whole virus pandemic outbreak, we all got locked down. And luckily I had just bought everything from a house, like a home gym. So I had all my equipment, weights, cardio stuff, no mats or anything. So I was just kind of training in my garage, like doing no contact stuff for about 4 weeks. And then I heard the UFC coming out saying they're going to start putting on fights. And I thought, you know, I'm a man of opportunity. So I thought maybe it'd be a good time to, you know, strike when the iron is hot and take advantage while, you know, everyone's sitting in quarantine. So I got a few buddies, not the best guys, but I got a few guys to train with and started getting ready. And then they're like, hey, you want to fight Edson Barboza? I was like, fuck yeah.
Dude, I mean, what a... Talk about seizing an opportunity. And let me tell you, it was a great fight.
Yeah.
It's showing your toughness, you know? I mean, because a lot of guys, they I didn't see you even cringe once when you get hit with those leg kicks. You got a good poker face or what? Or they didn't really hear it?
To be honest, I was, that's all I thought about. I was like, dude, I was like so worried about my legs. Like, oh, they're going to hurt after the fight. Like, I knew I had to go through the pain and walk through the fire, but wasn't too bad. Honestly, my ankle's a little sore from kicking him, but
you know what I don't like? I mean, listen, man, I've had some fights that were close and they went the other way, but you know, I seen his manager online somewhere saying that they're thinking about they feel bad for Edson because it happened to him a couple of times where they feel he really won the fight and they want to take it across to the board or something. They're thinking about doing that. It's like, hey, dude, listen. And I know the guy. I like that guy, yeah. The manager guy. But, like, it's like, yo, cry me a river, man. Shit. What are you doing? I mean, give me a break, dude. This is the breaks. That was a close-ass fight. So yeah. It's like, you can't bitch about that, dude.
Well, they're not going to do it because I think in Florida, and correct me if I'm wrong, Dan, the only way they could protest would be if Dan had taken anything or if there was a fraud. And they said, we don't think it's either one of those things. Yeah. Yeah, they said they know it's not that, so they said they're not going to protest it.
Yeah, you know what? It's like it sucks, obviously. You know, losing sucks, and I could have just as easily been on the other side of that board, but it is what it is. You know, we have to take our L's and move on. That's just how the sport goes. And, yeah, he came up – Alex came up to me after the fight, too. He's like, man, great fight, but we're going to appeal it. I'm like, okay, good luck, you know, whatever.
I mean, you're right. This, no, I see what the problem is now, being 6-1 and maybe people aren't talking enough. You see what the problem is, Jimmy? Danny's a fucking nice
very
guy.
Nice guy. Very nice guy. Very nice guy.
I would have said, oh, yeah, thank you. Eat a fucking D. How about that?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Go fuck kick that. Rocks, really? Bro. Why is he? Like, you took that shit on 2 weeks' notice, 2.5 weeks. Hey, dude, I mean, listen, give me a break, dude. Why is he shitting on your parade? I'm getting more upset than Dan about this.
It kind of sucks because, you know, like, sure, I went out and beat one of the best guys in the world on 2 weeks' notice. You know, no one's talking about that story. The underdog who came and took this fight on short notice went out there and, you know, I put the gas pedal on Edson, and no one's talking about that. They're just saying, oh, he lost. Robbery. It's not a robbery. You know, I got dropped, came back and won the fight. You know, I came back and I believe I won the moment. I lost the first round 100% because I got dropped. But I won the momentum, came back, put the gas pedal on him round two. I got hurt with the body shot. I didn't get dropped, but it fucking hurt. He hit me to the floating rib, little glancing knee on the floating rib. It hurt. I shot full guard.
Listen, man. Hey, you don't have to listen. I wouldn't even explain it to anybody. You have nothing to explain, man. Listen, yeah. It's not the same thing, but – when I'm playing VR listen, this is what happens. I just want to – I don't know if you're familiar. You play video games?
A little bit.
Okay, well, listen. Don't just bear with me for 1 second.
All right.
When I kill somebody, especially a ranked player, Jimmy.
Yes. Yeah. Of course.
And I'm standing over their pixeled corpse. I'm not – you know what I say, Dan? I go, GG. That means good game. You know what I mean?
Yeah, GG.
Just like you going, hey, good fight. Yeah. And then – now, you know what – if they get – I don't like – and this is what Alex is doing, the manager and – I don't like when I kill somebody in there and they are still cursing at me. Ah, you're fucking, you camped. You know what they're being? Just like Alex, they're being salty.
Yeah.
They're being salty, man.
Sore losers.
Sore losers. F that shit. You have enough friends, Dan Ige. You have two new ones right here.
Oh, yeah.
But listen.
Legend.
He's like, hey, man. But listen, dude. Hey, you had enough friends. I feel you could use some enemies. You're a nice guy. Those guys should take it. Edson, if they're doing the talking for Edson, he should speak up and say, you know what? I'm a man. I go in there, I fight, let the chips wear. He didn't take you out. He should have finished you then. Fuck
no one. No one's asked for a rematch either.
There you go.
They don't want a rematch. They just want a free W, but you got to earn that shit. You got to earn that shit.
Let them get Dan Ige with a full camp, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, he'll be in the
Jimmy
in the grave.
Hey, when you train with someone like Khabib, like you say when he flies, how does that work? Will you call him and say, hey, I hear you're coming in, I'd like to come, or do they call you and say, hey, come train with us?
No, well, so I don't know if you guys know or not, but I work with Ali like on the like management side. So I started working with Ali like I was 2-1 in my professional career and pretty much just became, you know, my lifestyle. So that's something that I'm very fortunate, you know, to get to train with, you know, a lot of his champions. Not only Khabib, we got Justin Gaethje, Kamaru Usman, Henry Cejudo. Yeah, the list goes on. You know, you guys know his roster. So that's something I get to like constantly do. It's just be around some of these top guys, and especially when I'm not fighting, I might be helping someone out and see what they go through fight week and see how they mentally prepare, see how they diet, see how they cut weight. And I'll just take little things from each guy. Like, what's this guy doing that makes him different to be a champion? What's this guy doing? And I feel like that's what I'm doing. I'm kind of, you know, evolving. I'm growing. You see it. I'm getting better in every fight. But, yeah, no one's talking about me, but that's all right because I'm flying under the radar and it's going to keep getting better. keep winning.
Well, yeah. That dude, shit, man. We're talking about you now. I'll tell you right now. You see, you seized that opportunity. And I'll tell you about Ali. I get along with Ali very well. He's another Henzo Gracie black belt, so we're close like that. But this is what I'll tell you about Ali. He might get some slack or get some controversy when he smacks another manager or something, but every one of his guys say nothing but good things about the guys, and they say he's a real good guy, and he does right by them. So all his guys, you never hear guys leaving him saying, oh, he did this to me, that to me. Everybody says good things. So I like that. I like that a lot.
Loyalty to the T, you know? It's just the guy will have your back 100%. And that's awesome. And that's why his guys and myself, including myself, will, you know, we have his back. Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what people say. It's just, you know, it's how people treat each other and how you be treated. And that's what it comes down to. And
Dan, you're in Hawaii right now. Where in Hawaii are you?
No, I'm in Vegas. I live in Vegas. I've been in Vegas for 4 years now, but yeah, my family's back home on Oahu, in Haleiwa.
How nice does his background look, Matt? That's what all I'm thinking of is how pleasant it looks to be wherever Dan is right now, like that little yard, desert, little breeze.
It's relaxing. Drinking some coffee, talking to legends.
Ah, you're the man, dude. How do you like living in Vegas? Was it a big? How was that transition, going from Hawaii to Vegas?
It wasn't too hard, actually, you know, because I left Hawaii. I had a dream. I had $27 in my pocket. I literally didn't have anything. I slept on my buddy's couch, Brad Tavares, you know, UFC middleweight.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So we used to train together back home, or we came from the same gym. And, you know, I just one day I bought a one-way ticket and, it pulled the trigger and, you know, tried to make it work, and it's working. So,
what is it about the Hawaiians?
You're on a 6-fight win streak right now. Like, very quietly, like Matt said, you know, this is 6 fights in a row. It's a very respectable win streak. Is there anybody you want next?
To be honest, you put me in a fight with anybody, it's a great fight. From a matchmaker standpoint, obviously, I want to keep fighting and working my way to the top. You know, I'd like to go out there and face a guy like, you know, someone like a Yair or Zombie. But I know these guys don't want to fight guys under them, really. But even like a Stevens, I believe he's a little bit above me, but he's coming off a couple losses. But he's still above me. I just want to keep fighting the best guys, the top guys, to show that I'm capable and that I'm one of the best for sure. And, I'm sitting at number 11 now, which is pretty awesome.
Thank you.
So it honestly doesn't really matter. I don't have any bad beef with anybody that I want to call out and fight this guy or that guy. I just want to keep fighting the best guys and keep winning and build my win streak up and, you know, eventually get to the title and win the title.
Dalvin Cater. I'm looking now at the right, like, I'm trying to think of guys I would like to see. And Dalvin Cater is a great fight.
I love that too. You know, Cater's a stud. Guy's got some crazy hands. I feel like I'm a bad draw for anybody. You know, you go in there, like, I'm not going to take a step backwards against anybody. It doesn't matter. So I don't know. I'm just excited. I just won. So I'm going to sit back, enjoy it a little bit, but I want to stay active. I want to come back, still fight in, you know, July, August, if it works. And see what happens.
Great. Where did you grow up in Hawaii?
On the North Shore in Haleiwa, Hawaii. I saw you guys went out there, I think, right? For the Dana White's looking. Yeah, did you guys go out there?
I've never been.
We were somewhere. You know, the best is when they're like, oh, where'd you go in Hawaii? I'm like, it was cliffs and shit. I don't know. I get on a plane. I'm the worst, Dan. But let me tell you, did you see that episode?
Yes.
It was so much. It was so much fun.
That's where I'm from. Like where Dana was jumping off that rock.
Wait, hold on. You're mistaken. Dana didn't go off that rock at all.
Oh yeah, yeah.
He might actually still be up at that fucking.
That's what I meant.
The fucking shit. Listen, Dana. The reason why Dana has me on that show is because I'm probably only got to break his balls about not jumping. The best is, yo, Dan. Dean Thomas was on it, and he was like, afterwards, he's like, you know, you took a lot to even go up there. I'm like, you fucking.
Oh, stop trying to find moral victims.
What was the first martial art you got into in Hawaii over there?
Jiu-jitsu.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, and the funny thing is, no one in Hawaii really trained jiu-jitsu. It was all kickboxers, stand-up guys. So, I started training jiu-jitsu in, I believe, ninth grade. My buddy's dad used to fight MMA. He was a purple belt, but I would go to his house after school. We literally just trained fundamentals like arm bars, or triangles, and we'd just do fundamentals. And then I started actually going to a gym, Sunset Beach Jiu-Jitsu, a little dojo on the North Shore. It was small at the time. They actually got a pretty nice dojo now, but started going over there, got my blue belt. I was competing. And all the Nagas, like Triple Crown, whatever they had over in Hawaii, and was doing pretty good because we were just, like I said, we're pretty much getting private lessons every day, me and my buddy from his dad, and we're just drilling. We got really good fast, and then got my purple belt. But then I started wrestling in high school, so it was a little opposite. I started wrestling in 11th grade, and I was like getting pinned because like I like being.
Yeah, like, that's funny. What's strange is, so you went to striking like last? Because shit.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was doing a little bit of striking when I was doing like the stuff at home, like the stuff. Yeah. But then I wrestled at Wartburg in Iowa for college. And then I started fighting MMA. Like I came back in the summer, pretty much had no striking, just
down. I'm thinking now, even from like, I'm thinking of all the Hawaiians I know that were fighters. And the one thing they have in common, like you just talked about Brad Tavares. I'm thinking of my old school buddy, nice. Kendall Grove. I'm thinking of BJ Penn, Max Holloway, yourself. I mean, I could go on. And every Cabbage. Cabbage from back in the day.
The Cabbage is fighting again, I think.
Come on, man. That guy's got a mind. What's he doing? Is he really?
I don't know. I heard he's got a fight or something somewhere in Hawaii.
Oh, shit, man. Well, listen. There's such a toughness about all these. They have to want everybody. It's different skill sets. But every one of these guys I'm mentioning, Jimmy.
Yeah.
These tough-ass Hawaiians, what is it about Hawaii? You're thinking they'd be so, you know, they got the
such a laid-back place, right? Nice, everything pleasant.
What is it about the BJ Penn, let's scrap type of attitude that these guys have? What is it, Dan?
I don't know. It's honestly, it's just a culture. It's a fighting culture. Like, literally, like, if you went to YouTube right now, just type Hawaii street fights, you got kids on there, like, They're good. They're throwing leg kicks, head kicks, like in and out, throwing three-piece combinations, head movement, slipping. Like it's just crazy. And like it's just, we grow up fighting in Hawaii. Like, I mean, now you got more, like you're hearing all these like gangs and gun shootings in Hawaii, which is unfortunate. But like it's always been, it's kinda weird, but it's always been like if you had a problem, you just fight. You know, even if you're friends, you just fight and then whatever, shake hands after, and we'll go to the beach and, you know, grab some waves. And but we literally just fight over nothing. We'll just fight. Just fight.
Now, are you near the tourist areas where you grew up? Or people have this image of Hawaii being this amazingly beautiful tropical place, but then there's other neighborhoods that are a little rougher.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up on the North Shore. It's more of like a surfing town. A lot of pro surfers come out there, so there are a lot of tourists that come in and out because they want to watch all the surfing contests. But
all right, Dan, let me throw a hypothetical at you. Myself and my little Jimmy Bird, we show up on the North Shore with two boogie boards, and we just want to – Jimmy has a snorkel, and we want to just get some – we want to just go and do a little boogie boarding on your beach. What happens?
You might – Mother Nature's no joke, you know. I don't care if you're John Jones.
Are you guys going to call me and Jimmy punch a couple of howlies?
We'll take you out. I'll take you guys out. We can go.
I'm worried about little Jimmy's safety. Do I have to protect him?
Thank you. Yes, you would.
Go to my buddy's Instagram, @ClarkLittle. He's a photographer. Go look at the shore break that guy shoots. It's pretty insane.
I was talking like he's a territorial. Like, would they look at me and Jimmy as outside? Do we have to know your friend to get a pass to hang out there?
If you're with me, you'll be all right.
Okay.
All right. Dan will protect us. Good.
All right. Awesome.
Well, hey, good, man. Congratulations on the win. Obviously, you look great, especially considering it was, what, you know, it's a 2.5 weeks notice. And can't wait to see you fight again. Again, Calvin Kattar's the one I want, but no one listens to me, so it probably won't be him.
Any of the guys you mentioned, Dan Ige, the word is out. You're coming for everybody, and I can't wait to watch who you fight next, buddy.
I can't wait either. I can't wait. Thank you guys so much for having me. It was an honor.
Anytime.
To speak to two legends. Thank you.
All right, buddy. Okay, good talking to you.
Take care, Dan.
Enjoy.
We'll talk soon.
Take care.
Be good, Dan.
Hey, buddy. Right. Let me do the shaka. Oh, sorry.
No, even though it's really, it's one legend and your friend Jim, but it's still, he's a nice guy.
I thought you were going to say one legend and your and his friend Matt.
No.
Jimmy. Call me a legend. I'll go, no, you're a legend.
Cut it out.
Oh, all right. But Jimmy, what are you doing? You doing any more podcasts today?
No, I have a little bit of work I'm doing. I've been working on stuff for Chip Chipperson, now has a Patreon where I'm doing these things because I can't do gigs. So I'm bored out of my mind and I'm losing a lot of money not doing gigs like every comedian. They offered me the Rogan Spotify deal, but I wanted to continue to do this with you. I said, no, I can't do it. Maybe next time. So you know, we're all just trying to hustle and make money.
Yeah, I'm happy Joe Rogan's all over.
I love Joe. Yeah, he's a good man.
Yeah, you like when stuff happens like that for good people and
for guys.
And he's yes. fun though. I like listening. I like watching him.
Even just more like, importantly, Matt, I love when good things happen to people who like me. See, like a guy like Joe likes me, so I'm happy for him. He loves you, so I'm happy for him. It's always good when a friend who likes you has good things happen to them. You know what true. I mean?
That is 100% true, Jimmy. Jimmy, what are you doing for the rest of the day, my man?
I might go to the store, go get some food for dinner. Not a whole lot. Got radio tomorrow. And not much, buddy.
Jimmy, did I tell you I'm watching Black Sails?
Did, yeah.
The I did show. Mention that. It's so much fun. I like when I get into new shows, you know.
Right, here's what I'm going to recommend. Only 90 so many... Day Fiancé.
Dude, my wife watches that, and then she watches a lot of shows with little people in it.
Yeah, they're good, too.
And she likes all the little people shows.
90 Day
Fiancé. And she's married to me. Listen to me. Jimmy, you're the best. I miss you. I will talk to you before next week, because I'm not going to be able to wait till Monday.
I'll talk to you on Friday. How about that?
You got it, brother. later, Jimmy. Goodbye, everyone.
Bye, guys.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.